Hey, everybody. You know, Mark and I have over 20 years of experience as therapists and as addicts in long-term successful recovery. We know better than anyone what works and what doesn't to break out of porn and sex addiction, heal betrayal trauma, and reclaim your relationship.
And we've poured all of our personal and professional recovery and healing experience into a first-of-its-kind program for addicts, spouses, and couples. We call it Dare to Connect.
At least four times every week, we engage with you in real time, in the trenches, giving you the knowledge and the tools to take back your life and relationship.
Whatever else you've done on your journey for healing and recovery, you've never done anything like this.
You know, Mark and I, we've made all the mistakes, so you don't have to. Don't reinvent the wheel.
We all know tomorrow never comes. Look, don't wait one more day to change. Claim your free two-week trial today at daretoconnectnow.com.
Hey, everybody. I'm Steve Moore.
And I'm Mark Castleman.
We know the pain and heartbreak of porn and sex addiction.
And we know the triumph of breaking completely free.
Every day, we help our clients find hope and healing.
Join us in the fight to take back your life, your marriage, and be stronger than ever.
This is the PBSC Squared Podcast. Hey, everybody. Welcome to the PBSC podcast. Mark and Steve coming at you here with episode 189 as we get ever presently closer to the magic 200 mark. I don't know what we're going to do that day, but something fun.
Something spectacular.
A PBSC extravaganza. Anyway,
broadcasting from the rim of the something volcano that's about to erupt.
Yeah. So Steve is dangling over the edge, hovering 200 feet above the lava. Yeah, something like that. Anyway, it's great to be with you guys today. We've got an interesting submission that we got a couple weeks back from somebody who we actually already responded to individually. But after looking back on it, the question was relevant enough that we thought it'd be a good episode to do a podcast on.
Mm-hmm.
And as always, we'll start with this because we usually don't. If you have questions that you would like addressed on the podcast, please feel free to visit our website at pbscpodcast.com. That's pbscpodcast.com. There's a contact form just down at the bottom, where you can submit questions anonymously. Please do include your correct contact information so we can reach out to you for clarification, but we are fine with just like a first name or whatever you'd like. We'd love to be able to address those on here briefly in the short time that we have on these podcasts. So we'd love to hear from you. But I'll go ahead and I'll read this. It's not too long, and then we'll jump right into it. She asked three questions in here, and we're literally just going to go through these questions one after the other after we read this. So this is what she says. My partner and I are long distance, so it's a long distance relationship. He has been a porn addict for the last 15 years and, due to unrelated circumstances, refuses to get into formal recovery right now, although he has been clean for a little over 2 months. I have a long history of sexual abuse and often suffer from a form of sexual anorexia. So for those who have not heard the term sexual anorexia before, it's kind of a clinical term that's used to describe an overall kind of averseness to sex, either an episode or a current kind of a deal where one's sex drive is either very, very low or completely nil. I have a long history. I'm reading the same line again. The last time we had a conversation about him getting into recovery, I set a boundary around being sexual and said if he wasn't willing to do even the smallest things for recovery, then I wasn't comfortable with being sexual. Right away, he refused to abide by the boundary and continued to shove inappropriate conversations and jokes in my face, only knowing it triggers me. Because of my past with sexual abuse, this feels worse than the addiction itself, and we are having trouble navigating. He is annoyed that we have no sexual relationship, even through words, and it seems like he's not able to understand my side of the story and doesn't care to. And then here are questions. Do I need to address my sexual trauma first? Question two, is my boundary unfair? And question three, how are we able to have a healthy sexual relationship from a distance without him being in formal recovery?
Got a lot there. Wow. Yeah. That is a lot.
It is, but it's a great series of questions, and we're happy to address this. It's going to be a good podcast today.
We are. Yeah, so let's take her questions one at a time. First, she says, do I need to address my sexual trauma first? And I'd say the response to that is yes and no.
Yeah.
Right? And as Absolutely. You said, Steve, you know, there's trauma is a complicated thing. If we try to fit trauma into a neat little box with all of its, you know, little linear components and base our decisions on that, you're going to get off the track pretty quick and probably be frustrated. And there's a really good chance even traumatized further. So, right, trauma, we often say on here, trauma is in the eye of the beholder. Mm-hmm. It's what it is to you. And it has the steps with regard to the healing of that and what's needed is very much dependent on the individual involved. Now, there are some foundational, you know, sound principles that must be adhered to with regard to trauma. And we could probably talk about those really quick.
Yeah.
Right. But yeah. There's a lot of components to trauma that here's the great challenge that can disrupt, and I'm going to put this in quotes, a lot of components to trauma that can disrupt healthy sexuality on a variety of levels. What about trauma disrupting difficult or unhealthy sexuality, especially sexuality at a distance, mm-hmm. where it's, quote, phone sex, you know,
virtual sex, cyber digital, sex of some sort.
Cyber sex, digital sex. Boy, you take sexual trauma and you take addiction and throw a couple together with those backgrounds and now step into that virtual at a distance world. We can't begin to calculate what can happen.
Yeah. Yeah, there are a lot of difficult components to that. And I know we're going to kind of address that in question number three here when we get to the, you know, the long distance piece of it. But you're right. I mean, this trauma piece makes things really complicated. And like Mark, like you said, I mean, no trauma is created equal, right? When we come out of a traumatizing set of circumstances or ailments like sexual abuse, and we are so sorry to hear about that. We know this partner is by no means alone in that process. Everyone comes out of those with different wounds, right? It's kind of like coming out of a car crash. Everybody comes out with different scars, different wounds. And so understanding where the wounds lie and how they impact one on a sexual level is a journey all of itself, right? And something that we won't cover today for sake of time.
Well, and I wanted to insert something really important right there, Steve. As all of you are listening to this, if you're an addict in recovery or if you're an addict who's not sure if you want to be in recovery or you're resisting it, as you hear us talk about the complexity of trauma in your partner, what we're hoping that this is going to trigger inside all of you addicts listening, we hope that this is going to create in you some beginnings of empathy for your partners. Right, there is a willingness and an openness that we're hoping all those suffering, you know, challenged with obsessive compulsive, you know, porn use or sexual addiction or all the things in that category, if I'm in a dating or a marriage or a partnership relationship with somebody who has trauma and sexual trauma, I need to decide as an addict or somebody who suffers with these compulsive behaviors, am I willing to open myself to the fact that this is highly, highly sophisticated, complex, triggering, and delicate for my partner? And can I increase my level of willingness and openness to this process as a result? Or am I just going to hunker down and resist and dig my heels in about how this sexual stuff has to be for my needs? We're Yes. hoping as you hear this complexity, you're going, wow, okay, maybe I need to step back and be a little more open and willing and less rigid in all this, if this is what it's really like for my partner. Wow. Right?
Absolutely. Yeah. In fact, I mean, right now, you know, on our Dare to Connect program for addict spouses and couples this month, we're talking about two kind of different areas. And Mark has kind of coined both of these terms, response dash ability and account dash ability. And what that looks like in terms of divvying up responsibility in the recovery process in a couple dynamic, right? From mm-hmm. the addict versus the partner and how that looks. And, you know, it's kind of we've been focusing on codependency and various facets of it for the last couple of months in the program. And so we have a month by month schedule. And so we've been talking about that a lot. And that very much ties in with where we were focusing on today with, if you're going to even open up the door, right, to communicate on sensitive topics like intimacy, be it physical, emotional, or otherwise, then you have to approach that space from a place of whatever else is involved, a place of authentic empathy, right? And being able to, in other words, before we even begin to map the problem or look at the focus of, well, this is what I'm wanting to get out of this conversation, or what are you wanting to get out of this conversation? It's this being able to sit with one another in our stuff. And while we may not agree, be able to really emotionally connect with what my partner is thinking or feeling, right? And that's done through the emotional bandwidth, right? In order to connect with somebody, for example, who's endured sexual abuse, I don't necessarily, and to empathize with them, I don't necessarily need to have experienced sexual abuse myself. Now, if I have, that might be able to give me some additional insight. But to empathize with a partner, what do I need to be able to connect with? I need to be able to connect with their feelings, right? For example, a lot of partners who come from sexually traumatized or abusive backgrounds, and I definitely hear this kind of subliminally in the submission by this listener, there's a perpetual sense of sexually never feeling like they're enough, right? Not adding up, not being sexually adequate, right? For their partner or anybody, you know, whatever the case may be, that's a sensitivity that many who struggle with sexual abuse and a sexually abusive past struggle with. And going back to Mark, what you said, right, about you have this dynamic where you have a sexual compulsion and an addiction on the one side of the marriage, sexual abuse on and trauma on the other side. And what do we let's just say that us sex addicts, us sexual compulsives, are not known for being sexually flexible, right? Where do we tend to come from? We tend to label sexual desires as sexual needs, quote unquote. Yes. We tend to exhibit a lot of sexual, we would call it sexual rigidity, right? I want to have my quote unquote needs met, not just in a general sense. I don't want to just sexually connect with my partner. It's got to be this way. It's got to be in this format. It's got to, you know, she's got to have this kind of hair color, this kind of breast size, this kind of, you know, all the stuff that accompanies sexually compulsive behavior. And you can see where this would, if we've got a guy who's not in active recovery, which it definitely sounds like is the case here, and somebody dealing with the sexual trauma component, if safety is not present, right? And if there isn't a safe space for that partner to be able to even have their own boundaries around what we discuss around sexuality, right? The telling of sexual jokes, making sexual innuendos. If I, as an addict partner, cannot provide that for my sexually traumatized partner, guess what my chance is of them being able to authentically connect with me in a sexual, physical way? Zero.
Right.
If they don't feel safe, if you don't feel safe as a partner to even have your partner be able to say, you know what, I can respect your boundaries on a verbal level. I can understand why that would be difficult for you, why that trauma would cause problems for you, you know, and I can respect that and I'm going to hold space for that. How in the world are you going to feel safe undressing, taking your clothes off and having sex with somebody?
Yeah. Things aren't safe at a half an inch deep in the relationship with these sexual issues. How are things going to be safe at 10 feet deep?
Exactly. Yeah. Go 10 feet down and see how that works.
Yeah,
for sure. Yeah.
And you brought up something, Steve, that I don't know that we often talk about. It's this, I love the phrase you used. You used the phrase authentic empathy. How do I, as a guy who has struggled with, you know, sexual compulsion and sexual addiction and, you know, porn addiction and so forth, how can I have authentic empathy for my wife, my partner, right? She suffered from sexual trauma, my gaslighting, you know, all the stuff that I put her through over the years and the decades. How can I come to a place where I can truly understand how she feels? Well, I'm going to tell you one of the things that our listeners may not have considered is that as addicts and as those who are in betrayal trauma healing, there's more common ground for the two of us than we might imagine. I'll tell you how. Why did I, Mark, turn to sexual compulsive behaviors early in my life? I turned to them in order to deal with pain, shame, feeling unattractive, undesired. I have some birth defects on my body. You know, people were cruel as kids to me. And so I dealt with a lot of really deep shame and pain. And the way I coped with that was by turning to sexual outlets. Okay. So I get a lot of the my partner on the other side of that equation. How has she dealt with her trauma and issues? Well, perhaps it's by avoiding and moving away from those sexual behaviors because she doesn't feel safe. Are we not both coping in our ways with some very similar ground? I don't think we stop to consider where we cross over and intersect with each other in these trauma, betrayal, pain, and difficulty issues.
Yeah,
I think if we did stop to consider it, especially as us guys who struggle with these issues, we have a lot more ground for empathy with our partners than we might imagine.
Yeah, no, I would absolutely agree with that, right? Because, and again, that's the real key with empathy that I think a lot of people don't understand. And even when a lot of professional colleagues of mine and Mark's sometimes seem to miss this mark as well. Empathy doesn't require having been through the same exact situation.
No.
It simply requires being able to have a bit of an imagination and be able to connect with, again, the emotions tied to the situation.
Yeah, one of the great examples I've run into working with some of my female patients is they'll share with me, for example, a horrible, awful, just catastrophic experience, for example, of a miscarriage or losing a child.
Mm.
Will I, as Mark, as a man, ever have that experience so that I can have empathy? No, I never will. However, does that mean I'm incapable of empathy with that person? No, because if, like Steve says, can I get into the general space of the emotion? Have I experienced deep loss in my life? Yes, I have. Have I experienced deep disappointment? Have expectations that I held dear to my heart been blasted away and destroyed? Yes, they have. Mm-hmm. I can get into that emotional space and very much share empathy with that person, even though I will never match up to their exact experience.
Absolutely. No, it's a great point to make. So that empathy piece is huge. And just addressing this amazing submitter of these questions. Will addressing the trauma, that will definitely, addressing that trauma, doing your own trauma work will definitely open up, I guess a good way to say this would be kind of sexual channels within the relationship. For lack of a better term, but it's only going to work if it's done in concert with maintaining safety in the current relationship.
Yes.
If there's authenticity and safety and connection there, because again, if you can do all the back work that you want, but if your current scenario, if your brain is perceiving consistent current threats to your safety, you're going to biologically have the same response as a bear popping out in the woods, right? Healthy, connected sex and the fight, flight, freeze response are never going to mingle.
No.
Ever.
No.
So that's, we just need to make that clear. Question number two, which is a great one. Is my boundary, meaning her boundary around, you know, having sexually inappropriate conversations or jokes shoved in her face, is my boundary unfair? Mm. And to this one, the answer is not yes and no, like it was with the first one. The answer is a clear, resounding not at all. As an equal partner in a relationship, right? Every person that's in a partnership has both the right and the obligation, okay, both, to set whatever boundaries they feel comfortable with in regards to various elements of the relationship, including their own sexuality. Okay. When it comes to a relationship being egalitarian or equalized and two people coming together and actually practicing intimacy, that means both people being able to come and be their most authentic self. And a person's authentic self may have some wiggle room in terms of wants or preferences when it comes to various things, including in the bedroom. But when it comes to safety issues around sex, nobody who cares about you, and we don't do absolutes a lot in here, but I'm gonna do one now and let the hate mail come. I don't care. Nobody who purports to love me should be saying in the one hand, hey, I love you, I care about you, I want to build a life with you. And at the same time, I'm going to push you into a sexually unsafe place. And I need you to be sexually unsafe in order for me to be sexually gratified. Those in my mind do not square in any realm of reality.
I'll tell you where that was for me in my addiction days, but my early recovery days. I would go, quote, to the place of empathy, but I would say that it wasn't authentic. It was sort of mandatory empathy.
Pandering a little bit.
Check the box empathy.
Why?
Because I wanted to get my sexual needs met. And if I have to show empathy to get my sexual needs met, then I'm going to go through the jump through the hoops of empathy in order for that to happen. What we want to do, all the guys listening who struggle with these sexually compulsive, you know, habits, if you want to move to the place of a truly connected and authentic and intimate relationship, are we willing to step back and put our, quote, sexual needs on the shelf for a minute in order to be able to step into that truly empathetic place? I had a really hard time with that, right? Where does my true love and compassion and kindness and empathy for my partner start? And where do my desperate needs for certain sexual envelopes to be pressed upon, right? Certain sexual things to happen. Where does the empathy stop and those start? I had a tough time balancing that because I found that if I wasn't careful, I would try to manipulate my spouse in order to get my sexual needs met.
Yeah.
So I heard this description, you know, so on a phone call, starting to introduce a little bit of sexual humor, start to get a little bit playful and funny, and then to see how that goes, and then press that boundary a little bit further. And now we're actually starting to talk a little bit sexual. And now I'm pressing it further and further. And how far can I get her to go? As opposed to, wow, let me back off here and see where she's coming from and where she's at and where her trauma's at, and not push the envelope. Actually hold back and be very tentative and very cautious as I approach this, instead of always being the one who pushes the envelope and pushes the envelope. That was a really difficult transition for me to make.
Gosh, I'm really glad that you shared that, Mark, because it really does demonstrate a good dynamic and one which very well could be going on here, because I think back and there are definitely times where in less than tactful or healthy ways, I would try to put out the sexual vibe in my marriage too, right? There would be times where you could, kind of do that. And who knows, maybe that's what's going on here. Maybe there's a lack of skill set around, you know, just being able to be transparent and say, you know, I want to be physical and here's why, or the reasons, or what are your thoughts about that? Or, you know, whatever, being more direct. But regardless of that space, right, this addict partner is doing himself a tremendous disservice, because you are never going to cultivate the kind of sexual response from your partner using that methodology that you are looking for. So going back to this partner, no, you absolutely, again, should be setting whatever. Nobody has the right to tell you what is going to feel healthy for you when it comes to your own sexuality. So nobody, I mean, I'm a therapist to clients, so is Mark. I would never be comfortable looking at a client in the eye and saying, this is exactly what would be right for you in the bedroom with your partner. I would never do that. Mm-mm. And I get paid for my time, right? And we have plaques on the wall that say we're expert in sexuality. We would never purport to do that. I sure as hell wouldn't have anybody else do it either. So anyway, all that is to say, we won't beat that to death, but we hope that that dynamic will change. And we hope that gives this partner some direction on where to go in terms of feeling some validation that, yes, you, again, not only do you have that right, but all of us have that obligation to advocate for ourselves and say, look, this is where I can go with you in this way, and this is where I can't. So that's where I'm at.
And as someone who struggled with sexual, you know, compulsivity and addiction and so forth, one of the things that really was a big motivator for me to get out of my addiction and compulsion was how often I threw my partner under the bus, so to speak. To get my needs met, my compulsion satisfied, right? My fantasy fulfilled. I became very tired of that because it didn't feel genuine. It didn't feel authentic. And my message to all the guys, you know, listening is there a part of you that's willing to press the pause button on your sexual needs or, you know, demands or compulsions and say, you know what? I'm willing to shelf that and take a step back so that I can really understand this person, this woman that I'm involved with. What are her needs? Where is she coming from? How are the things that I'm saying or doing pressing her trauma triggers? And do I really want to step back and understand that and really look at it from an objective space? And if I'm going to do that, I've got to put the sexual stuff on hold because I can't do both at the same time.
Yeah.
Cannot do both at the same time.
Absolutely. Great point. Great point.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we will press along here. We're moving on to the third and final question here. Are we able to have a healthy sexual relationship from a distance without him being in formal recovery?
Oh, man, that's a big question.
It is. It is. And we're just going to tell you right now that you're not going to get a split the baby down the middle answer from us on this. And we'll tell you why. All we can do is speak to our own experience professionally and personally. That's all we've ever purported to do on this podcast or on our D2C program. It's all we will ever continue to do. Do I know that unicorns don't exist? No. I'm fairly confident that they don't. But at the same time, no one's ever been able to prove to me that they don't either. And I can make that same argument about a lot of things in life. So answering this question, are we able to have a healthy sexual relationship from a distance without him being in formal recovery? The answer that we would give you is that in theory, such a thing could be possible. Is it in any way probable? Absolutely not.
Well, and let's speak to that really quick. So
let's do.
You know, I've spent the last 23 years studying as deeply as anybody that I've heard of about the neuropsychology of addiction, the brain wiring of addiction, and all kinds of addiction, but especially sexual addiction. How does the brain become wired with this kind of compulsion and focus and, you know, habitual behavior? Well, it has a dramatic impact on the human brain, with all of the complexities and all of the associations that have to do with human sexuality, which we don't have time to get into today. But when I become wired as an individual with regard to sexual compulsivity or obsession or addiction or whatever have you, the wiring in my brain is highly complex, it's highly connected, and it's highly diverse. So here comes the million-dollar question right here. If I'm going to engage, for example, as is asked here, if I'm going to engage as a guy who struggles with sexual compulsivity and all that wiring in a distant sexual relationship, in other words, one that's going to be over the phone, it's going to be digital, it's going to be virtual, can I separate all of my addiction or compulsion wiring from years or decades of that behavior? Can I completely separate that wiring from what I'm doing with my partner in this moment? I'll tell you what this is compared to. Steve and I have both worked extensively with people who suffer from substance abuse. This would be like me working with a deep alcoholic who's had a drinking issue for years or decades of his life. And all the wiring, all the physical, biological, chemical, emotional wiring attached to that drinking habit. And now he says, can I engage in pure social drinking with my partner? And can I keep all of my alcoholic wiring completely separated from my social drinking and have it be completely healthy? Technically, a person could do that, could manage that. Like I said, I've been at this 23 years. Have I ever found a person with deep alcoholic wiring who could become an active social drinker? I've not run into that person. I've heard some anecdotes about a few that exist out there, so it is possible. But I guess the question is, does that alcoholic want to take the risk?
Yeah.
Does he want to go try that? And I guess I'm saying to this couple, you could definitely experiment with this. But here's and Steve, you and I talked about this. Here's where the great paradox and irony comes in. Here I'm compulsive sexually. I have addiction issues sexually. Now I'm going to objectively step back and try and experiment and observe it and watch it as an objective bystander to see if it's healthy or if it isn't healthy. How am I going to do that as a guy with sexual compulsivity and addiction history to try an objective experiment?
Yeah, I mean, and a big part of the concern here is due to we're talking about, just to be clear for everybody listening, it's due to the distance component, right? Because
yeah,
it's inferred here with the question that distance means some sort of virtual or cyber sex.
It's all
right?
Virtual, it's cyber sex.
This, yeah, done. And we would say that there are definitely risks to that with any coupleship where there hasn't even been addiction present. But when we're talking about a dynamic where we have, think of it like going back to the alcoholic terminology, right? When an alcoholic becomes addicted to alcohol, they are addicted to the alcohol, and that's true. But to varying degrees, depending on the case, depending on the person, depending on their scenario and their acting out behaviors, there's a whole list of behaviors, right? In some circles, this is called ritualizations, right? Yeah, there's a whole list of ritualizations or mini behaviors that are a part of the alcohol drinking experience. It's the smell of the bar. It's the smell of the alcohol, that specific brand that they like. It's the group of friends that they're around every time they drink. It's the music that's playing in the background at the bar, right? It's all of those other things that tie in and form an overall experience that create the addictive element, not just the alcohol itself. And the same thing holds true here. If we were to liken this to if we were to take this into sexual terms, in order to engage in virtual sex, what am I having to do? I'm getting on the internet or getting on the phone. I'm sending or receiving pictures or videos. I'm focusing, even though there is an interactive component, clearly, I'm seeing this person through a screen of some sort. For all of you, and this guy has a demonstrated 15-year history of pornography addiction, right? We know that from the question that's submitted. And pornography, 99.9% of pornography, how is it accessed? Digitally, right? Through a screen, through a digital means. And all of those cues, all of the ways in which pornography, typical pornography, trains the brain to be highly objectified, to focus on the next shiny object, to strip away the humanity of the person involved, the sexually engaging with self. There are all these little components and pieces that through a recursive porn masturbation habit that have been built up over time, that over time, that pattern, trying to engage in virtual sex with a partner is going to be sort of akin to the alcoholic going and hanging out with the same group of friends at the exact same bar, doing all the exact same things, but drinking fruit punch instead.
Right.
Is it possible? Yes. Would we ever therapeutically recommend such a course or pattern of behavior? 100% no. Because putting an alcoholic in that kind of situation, for most, it's less a question of if they will drink. It's a question of just how long will it be? And we're talking about, and this is probably even more difficult to navigate than that scenario.
I would say that it is, right? Because all the elements of the sexual addiction, porn addiction, are all present.
They are.
What you just
everything,
described.
All of those little side pieces,
all
right?
There.
They're all engaged.
Except it's
the only
my part.
Difference is who's on the screen. Everything else is virtually the same.
Everything else is virtually the same. Now let's say for sake of argument that this couple decided that they wanted to experiment to see if this could be healthy. We want to make sure that anybody listening to try the experiment, it's very important that you have a very authentic confrontation with yourself about what it would take to try this, to truly have this be a quote experiment, an objective, healthy experiment. This would take a high level of safety, honesty, transparency, and authenticity in this relationship. I, as an addict, am not going to be able to guard my old behaviors and be inauthentic and gaslight and make rationalizations and justifications if we're going to try this experiment. I need to be truly open as we're trying this to let you know, here's how I'm feeling, here's what's happened to my lust level, here's what's happening inside of my brain. Here's how I behaved after we hung up the phone for the next hours or days and whether I stayed healthy and faithful, right? I hope I'm communicating the level that it would take to try this experiment and have it be a true objective experiment, right? Safety, honesty, transparency, my openness and willingness as a guy who has this struggle. Right? Empathy for my partner. How is this for you as we're trying this experiment? What are you experiencing? What is this like for you after we get off the phone or we get off the video? Am I communicating what it would take to do this kind of experiment and really have it be a true experiment? There's a lot of moving parts here.
There are. And I mean, I guess the best way we're not telling anyone how to live or what will absolutely work and not work. And this is a podcast, not individual therapy.
No.
And therapy itself is an art form as much as it is a science. But what we will say is that based on our personal and professional experience, I mean, and I know I speak for Mark with this, neither one of us would be in any way comfortable with this arrangement. To me, speaking for myself, could I make something like this work? Maybe. I would never try it. And I've been sober nearly a decade. There is simply no realm of reality in which me, given my background, given the emotional, mental, psychological cues, the neurological connections that I formed through decades of addiction, there is no way that I would try to navigate something like this in a way that felt confident to me.
I just
wouldn't.
And again,
impossible, but not probable.
Yeah. And again, it's for each one of you, it's individual for each one of you.
Absolutely.
But if you're going to try the experiment, please be authentic and honest and transparent enough to have all the elements we just talked about to try the experiment. Otherwise, it just becomes rationalization, justification, you know, all the old cults of behaviors that always end up being a part of this. And then what happens? I get deeper in my addiction. My partner feels less safe. And we didn't really try an experiment. It was just the same old status quo that continued on.
Yes. And lovingly speaking, to this listener who submitted this question in, given what we know, just a little bit that you've shared, and with regard to your and the concerns that you have with the first two questions that you submitted, I think we'd probably lovingly say that question number three is probably a moot point when it comes to safety or being able to navigate that in a healthy way.
Right.
With all the other moving parts that are going on, him not being in recovery, again, your chances of, I think a snowball in hell has probably a safer chance of coming out the other end than that does of being successful in the long term.
Yeah. If he's not in recovery,
absolutely.
He's not learning the skills, the tools, the approach.
Being able to separate that for him is going to be impossible.
Yeah. He doesn't even understand his own neuropsychology. He doesn't understand the wiring of his own brain. I mean,
to say nothing of your safety. I mean, him being able to navigate that successfully is going to be impossible, but your safety and all that stuff. So anyway, well, guys, thank you for letting us join you as always once a week. We appreciate the submissions. And if you would like, again, something to be addressed here on the podcast, you're welcome to contact us at pbscpodcast.com. Contact form at the bottom. We'd love to hear from you. And for those who have not yet tried it, we are growing quicker and quicker, it seems, over at our Dare to Connect program for addict spouses and couples. Guys, for the current low price that we offer it at, and with a 2-week trial, you access over 25 hours of interactive, live, and on-demand content from us, available at the touch of your fingertips through any device of your choosing. Don't navigate this process alone. Come and find a program that, for the cost of one or two therapy sessions, gives you the benefit of having a lifetime of experience and knowledge base, for better or worse, right? Depending on who you are, from two addicts in long-term recovery who also happen to be therapists. Come join a growing community of people who are at where you're at right now. We'd love to have you join us. Come grab your free 2-week trial on that, and you can find that at daretoconnectnow.com. We'd love to have you come and see what it's all about.
Yeah. As always, thanks for joining us. Appreciate and care about all of you. And we'll look forward to picking up the next topic on our next episode.
Sounds great. Have a good week, everybody.
See ya.
Everything expressed on the PBSC podcast are the opinions of the hosts and the participants and is for informational and educational purposes only. This podcast should not be considered mental health therapy or as a substitute thereof. It is strongly recommended that you seek out the clinical guidance of an individual qualified mental health professional. If you're experiencing thoughts of suicide, self-harm, or a desire to harm others, please dial 911 or go to your nearest emergency room.